majoring in music education and has been working the last year and a half as a part of our graduate program in higher education, and she's been an intern in student development, and she's here to speak this morning. Please welcome Megan.
Good morning. It is a privilege to be able to be here this morning and speak with you at the first chapel of 2010. Some of you, this is the first chapel of the last semester of your college career. Congratulations. This passage that Dean read this morning from Luke 15 is one that, for those who have been in the church for any amount of time, is somewhat familiar. The prodigal son is a familiar figure in Sunday school classes and in church services. But an aspect of the story that isn't often focused on is that of the older brother. This morning, I am here to share with you my story of being an older brother. Obviously, I am not an older brother, but I am an older sister to my younger brother, Larry. And in my life, I have lived beautifully this picture of being an older brother. Growing up, I grew up in a Christian home, which is probably something that many of you can attest to yourselves. I also grew up in a family that had three generations of men and women who served in the armed forces. I don't know where they went wrong with me, but apparently I wasn't going to be going that way. But because of these two things, it instilled in me a very strong love for doing what was right and also gave me a very strong call to action from a young age. I was that child who, as an older sibling, which those of you who are older siblings might be able to attest to, was really great at keeping my younger brother in line. I knew what it was like, I knew what he was supposed to do, and regardless of my own behavior, I was very specific about letting other people know how he should act. And of course, this meant that I told grandparents he didn't deserve toys because of his behavior and other such activities, and again, regardless of my own behavior. As I grew up into middle school and high school, still keeping this very strong sense of doing the right thing and being a part of the right activities, growing up in church, I began to be a part of activities such as youth groups, singing in church choirs, being in musicals like Godspell, even in my senior year of high school, preaching to the congregation at our church on the subject of faith. As far as I was concerned, and as far as those around me were concerned, I was living an exemplary Christian life. I was living in accordance with all of the rules and regulations that I knew because I loved them, because it gave me a sense of purpose. It gave me a sense of, this is who I am doing what I should, and this is what makes me a good person. I went to a Christian university, Azusa Pacific is out in California in the Los Angeles area, and at APU, I had the opportunity to be surrounded by Christian thinkers and have my mind expanded and be involved in deep theological discussions about gender roles and the aspect of how church is supposed to be involved in culture. I was a chaplain of the Wind Ensemble, which I know might sound a tiny bit geeky, but it was way cool, trust me. I led groups of students on mission trips abroad to Thailand. I was a resident advisor for 2 years when I was in school. I was that RA that was so in love with all of the rules that we had to follow that my friends, to their chagrin, weren't even allowed to have a birthday candle on their cake in their apartment because that was violating the open flame policy. I was very careful as to do the things that I knew were part of an exemplary Christian life, as I said before. I racked up activity upon activity. I did the next step, to the next step, to the next step. In my senior year of college, I had decided that I wanted to work with college students in my life. I had been so impacted by being at a Christian school. I had been so shaped by the environment that I was a part of that I wanted to continue doing that in the lives of other college students. Unlike most of my friends who were graduating, I had a job before graduation. I was going to be a resident director at a small Christian school in South Carolina and was so excited about the opportunity. Much like Julia Roberts' character in the movie Mona Lisa Smile, I was full of my own ideas about what it meant to be a woman, and I was going to go and take this message to all those pretty Southern belles in South Carolina, and I was going to expand their minds, and I was going to stretch them as to what they thought that they could be. I moved to South Carolina. I was well-liked by the students that I was working with. I was seeking a new church. I was doing my work to the best of my ability. I was well-liked and appreciated by my staff. As far as I was concerned, at the age of 23, I was doing absolutely everything that I was supposed to. I was at the top of my game. I was at the top of the world. And the view was great. Until January of 2007, very soon after the new year, something changed for me. I fell into a depression that I didn't understand. Being a person who'd always been somewhat happy-go-lucky, I didn't quite understand why I was beginning to have these feelings of anxiety, why I was beginning to have these feelings of not wanting to be left alone by myself. As it began to take hold of me, I also began to have this extreme anxiety about death. I felt like death was knocking at my door all the time. I was afraid to be alone in my apartment. I was afraid to sleep by myself, and I had to have people come and sleep with me at night because I just wasn't sleeping. As it progressed, I became paranoid of visions of things that I was going to do to harm myself. I didn't want to do them. I didn't want to die, but I was afraid that they were going to take hold of me in a way that I didn't have any control over. As I saw through these things, I realized this feeling of death was so anxious for me because I felt like I was beginning to see everything I'd done in my life was meaningless. I didn't understand how I could feel this way. I'd done everything. I'd done everything that I was supposed to. Also, being a child who my first phrase in life was, I can do it myself, didn't really put me in a good position for asking for help. I was very much about control. My life had been about control, and I was losing it quickly and in a way that just scared me to death. My friends and my family began to be concerned and suggested that I go to counseling. And of course, being the good Christian that I was, I had to seek Christian counseling. That was very important. So I went to a pastor at the church that I was a part of at the time and met with him. The first meeting, I sat down and I began to describe to him the feelings that I was having and how I was so confused and I didn't understand what was going on in this anxiety and paranoia and concern with death that I was having. And very shortly after I began talking, he changed the conversation to something I didn't expect. He began to ask me about my salvation. I didn't quite understand what this had to do with anything that I was experiencing, but since he was the man with a PhD, I was going to listen to him. He asked me how I knew I was saved and how I knew I was going to heaven. Having grown up in the church and doing all the things that I had done and being friends with the people I was and listening to all the sermons that I had, I knew the answer to what salvation was. I knew that it was a result of Jesus' death on the cross and his resurrection and accepting that salvation. However, I kid you not that as I sat there answering his question, the thing that came out of my mouth was because I'm a good person. As I said it, I knew that there was something wrong with that, but I had the most strong conviction that that was why. I knew as I sat there looking at that man, thinking about my life, there was absolutely no way that God should not save me. There was no reason why I shouldn't be allowed first into heaven, if anything. I had done what I was supposed to do. I had lived by the rules as the older brother who stands outside his father's house, refusing to go in because of his younger brother. I stood there just in my own self-righteousness, convinced that even though I had been with my father, I had done everything he asked, I deserved salvation. I was a good person. The pastor continued the conversation and went into a series of questions. And he asked me, "Megan, if you were thrown off a ship in the ocean, can you save yourself?" And I said, "Well, absolutely. I was a lifeguard, a swim instructor, and a coach of a championship swim team. Who better to save themselves than someone with those credentials?" He then asked me, "All right, shark comes by feeling a little hungry and chews off both your arms. Can you save yourself?" "Well, to be certified to be a lifeguard, you have to be able to tread water for 30 minutes without using your arms. So I was going to give it my best shot." He then asked me, "All right, shark still hungry, comes by and takes both your legs." Maybe slightly discouraged, but still the eternal optimist with this can-do attitude, I said, "Well, I'll just float on my back. I'll last as long as I can." He took me to the next question, the final question, and said, "Megan, if you had no arms, no legs, you are on the bottom of the ocean and your lungs are filled with water and you are dead. Is there anything you can do to save yourself?" I thought, this guy's ridiculous. How in the world does this have to do with his line of questioning? If I'm dead, then obviously I'm dead. What am I going to be able to do to save myself? I looked at him and he had so much compassion in his eyes, as he knew that I obviously had not a clue. I had lived for 23 years in the church, and I didn't understand the salvation that comes from God's grace of his son dying on the cross. He said, "Megan, you have a choice. You have been brought here to this place today. You've experienced the things you've experienced. You've had the life that you've had. And now you have the choice to look at yourself and recognize yourself as that limbless blob on the bottom of the ocean who is completely dead and in no way able to save herself. You have to be able to acknowledge that about who you are and where you're at in your life. And then you need to be able to admit those sins, to be able to take it, and to be able to accept the gift that God is here giving you. He's asking you to come inside, like he went outside to the older brother and asked him to come inside with him. He was saying that to me, and this pastor was saying, "Here you are today, what are you going to do?" Friends, I'm here to tell you that on March 7th of 2007, I became a Christian, and I didn't do anything. There's nothing I could do to save myself. Absolutely nothing. And for a person who is a control freak, who could do everything by herself, it was the most humbling moment of my life, but it was the most beautiful. For many of you out here today, you have amazing and beautiful faiths that have been brought to you by a breathtaking understanding of the grace of God. And I thank God for that. For others of you, you might be questioning or not sure where you are. But for all of us, no matter where our journey of faith is, I'm here to tell you today that no matter what you're doing, no matter what you think you can do, no matter what your skills are, your deficits are, there is nothing in your life that you can ever do to save yourself. Like the older brother, he was so indignant. He was so frustrated by the sin of his younger brother. He couldn't understand how this person could go and throw away everything that God had given him and then, or his father had given him, and come back and be accepted in. I was just like that older brother, looking at my friends who were Christians and how happy they were, and realized that after I became a Christian, I was one of the most bitter and angry people that I knew. Tim Keller, who is the author of the book Prodigal God, which talks a lot about the older brother, and I encourage you all to read. In a seminar I went to in August, he said, "You can't remain bitter and angry with anyone unless you think you're better than them." Because we all have to realize who we truly are. And I was one of the most bitter and judgmental people that I could think of, because I believed I was better than everybody in the church because of everything that I had done. The legalism and the self-righteousness that I was living in had led me to believe that I deserved something that I didn't, because I wasn't better than anybody else. It's hard for me to say a lot of these things, only because in those years of living as wanting to be this person who racks up activities, the pinnacle of my life was going to be what I'm doing right now. As I dreamed about who I was going to be, I was going to be a woman who spoke at seminars and at conferences and gave advice to women on how not to date a jerk and, you know, all of those things. And as I thought about this last night and thought about speaking here today, I thought, Lord, there has got to be someone better for this. I wanted this to be what I did in my life, and like Moses, I asked him to send someone else. But this is a testimony that, not just because it's mine, but I've never heard in the church before. No one in my life called me out. No one asked me where my salvation actually came from. No one challenged me and asked me why I did the things that I did, what I truly believed and what my faith was. This morning, I feel like I have the opportunity to ask you that question. Where is your faith coming from? Who's saving whom here? Are you racking up a list of activities and acts of good service that you have done and are putting them away to bring them someday to God and say, this is why you should let me in? Or are you willing to submit yourself to the Father who loves you more than you could ever possibly imagine, who is coming out of his kingdom and did so in sending his Son to earth to say, come in and be in fellowship with me? Are you going to accept that invitation that he has, to accept the grace and the salvation through Jesus' sacrifice on the cross? Or are you going to stand outside indignant because you feel that somehow what you've done in your life means that you deserve what God has to offer? You'll never deserve it. The only action in the world that can save you is one that you can't even do, and that was Christ's death. All you can do is open up your heart and confessing your sins and admitting the fact that you need someone to save you because you can't do it yourself. And if you're feeling that way this morning, I encourage you, please let him in. It was the most amazing day of my life, and the last 3 years of my life have been the most amazing, and they continue to grow, and my expectations of what God is going to do expand exponentially. God comes out of his kingdom in the form of Christ and asks you in. Will you walk with him? Amen.